Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin is daf Chof Zayin, and we are holding at the Halakha Perek. Look at this on daf Chof Vav Amud Beis. We have the blessings of the Rebbe with us and a smile of the Rebbe. So for sure we can go ahead. And we had, of course, a find on the Halakha Perek from our captain yesterday. Everything is Baruch Hashem, couldn't be better. And so we have a little bit of an introduction over here. There are three different issues that we have to worry about in Erevin because there's three completely different types of Erevin. We've been talking about not Erevin, but shapes of things and the idea of the differences of the urine. So we know that there is such a thing as a type of Erev that's done for houses in a chotzer to make them all one rishus so that it doesn't look like rishus or robbing when you leave your house to go into the commons. We also know that there's a similar type of idea from the various chatzerot into a mavoi. Again, the geometric shapes have been discussed prior to this perek. But whatever those definitions are, we've gone through the definitions, the mavoi with the two chatzeros, with the two batim, into opening into the chatzeros and so on. We're not going to go over that again. And we have to have what is called a shituf of putting food to make a common rishus in one of the chatzerot of the mavoi, which everybody participates in. In the chotzer, we put the mavoi in one of the houses, which everybody participates in. Then we have a completely different type of eruv, and that is the eruv techumim. Now, our Masechet discusses all of the various types of eruvim, and there are some things that are in common, and because of that, in our Mishnah, we're going to be discussing elements that are in common with two, perhaps three, according to Rashi, of the different Eruvin. But let's just recognize what the Erev Tchumim is about, because we haven't really discussed it in detail. And that is that where a person is on Shabbos is Mikomo. And that's called his Mokom Shvita for Shabbat. That Mokom is, if it's in the middle of nowhere, is his four personal Amot that are around him. That's personal space, as defined by the Torah. We'll see about the diagonal of the and the actual the way in which the radius of a circle around him affects that personal space. That's to be discussed later. But whatever the personal space is, it extends 2,000 amos beyond that is the Tchum of Shabbos. If a person is in an enclosed area, so then Tchum of Shabbos begins from the enclosure. If a person is in a city, then the Tchum of Shabbos begins from the edge of the city. If the city is enclosed, then it begins at the wall, as we saw yesterday as the introduction to this perek, as long as the wall wasn't built first, if the wall was an extension of the city. Otherwise, we'll learn the details of how exactly we define the edge of a city when a city obviously has a particular well-defined edge to be discussed. What happens if a person wants to go further than 2,000 amos in one particular direction? What he can do then is he can be koveya amokom shvita before Shabbos. And that way, the moment that Shabbos is chal, that is his place. And then he can go 2,000 amos from that place in every direction. Now, of course, he also loses out, because if he changes his mokom shvita from what was previously the city, let's say, right? And he wants to go to the east, and he walks out of the city, and he goes his 2,000 amos to the east, which he's allowed to reach anyway, even if it was in the city, and he makes that his mokom shvita, he can no longer go to the west because he's not mokom shvita in the city. And therefore, anything that he gains on one side is going to lose in the other side. So one has to be very certain about where one wants the Erev. How do you do this? So one way of doing it is by simply walking there, being there when it is that Shabbos begins, and being koveya that as your place for Shabbos. But suppose you don't want to walk there. So then what you need to do is to have food there that defines your mokom shvita, even if you're not there. And then you can walk out there to your food, which is supposedly your home. And from that point on, then you walk your 2,000 amot. Now, the question is, what is considered to be food? Remember that the idea over here is to make a mokom that everybody is connected with. So this is a home which has food, or your home is in terms of the walking out of the tchum. So that's food. How do we decide what exactly is food in this context? That is koveya amokom. We know that the Torah discusses what food is because it talks about meiser that you were poida. And it says over there, you have to go up to Yerushalayim bring the money up to Yerushalayim, to report to your Maisa Sheni, and then you take the money and you give it b'chol asher ta'aveh nafshecha, b'bakar, b'batzon, and so on and so forth. So all of the things that are listed there, we're going to go through and see how they create either a klal prat or klal, or how they create a ribui miyut ribui, which has different implications, as we know from before, and that is going to have implications for our Erev. Before we begin, let me just point out that according to Rashi, the Bechol Ma'arvin of our Perek actually means Bechol Ma'arvin even Eruvei Chatzeros. So then when it says Bechol Ma'arvin Umishtatvin, it means all three types of Erevin have the same deal. We're going to see later on, and Tosfos insists that that's the Pshat here, and the Rambam Paskins as well, at the way Tosfos learns it, that this does not include Eruvei Chatzeros. And that what we're talking about over here is Eruvei Tchumim, particularly. Let me explain to you the logic in terms of the structure of the Masechet so you can understand why that would be true. Basically, what happens is that at this point in the Masechet, what we really do is not switch to the details of Erevin, but rather we switch to Tchumim. And the reason that we switch to Tchumim is because that is an extension of the concept of space. Personal space, extended space, and so on. And the whole first part of the Masechet was spatially concerned, correct? Whether it's in terms of the area that's inside, or whether it's a question of how does a mechitza define a space, or how do we become aware of a space, and the relationship of Lechi, Yetzirah, Pesach, and Korah, and so on, to the nature of space, and Pitikra, Yorid Vesotem, et cetera, et cetera. So it makes sense that actually later on we start getting into the details of what type of diurin relationships between chatzeros require an eruv with each other. That's going to come after the whole discussion about tchumim. So Tosfos's point is not a strange one at all. In other words, when you look at it locally, it certainly seems, hey, wait a minute, we've been dealing with chatzeros. Why the heck would we drop it and start talking about how to make an eruv in other places? But the truth is, it makes a great deal of sense to see the structure of the Masechta also, according to the Pshat of the Rambam and Tosfos. Anyway, so with that in mind, let's talk about the interrelationship in our Mishnah between the din of what you can buy with your Meiser Sheni money that you were poda, and now you have to bring that up to Yerushalayim. Obviously, you don't have to. You could have just taken the Meiser itself up to Yerushalayim, but that can be rather unwieldy. So what the Torah gave you an option to do is turn it into cash, and then you can easily move the cash up to Yerushalayim. So, b'chol ma'arvin u'mishtatvim, basically anything. Chutz min amayim u'min amelach. And we're going to see that when we say anything, it doesn't necessarily really mean anything, but that we'll get to in the Gemara. So, besides water and salt, everything is considered to be food. And the same thing would be true when it comes to coming up to Yerushalayim and buying your ma'aser. Hakol nikach b'kes of ma'aser. Chutz min amayim u'min amelach. And not only that, if somebody makes a neder, and he says, I'm not going to eat any food. So then he is allowed to eat the mayim and melach. And what's more interesting is that the din of what defines food is not what defines personal food. Because a nazir, certainly you can't say his food is going to be wine. And yet the din is you could actually use food as long as it's food for somebody. If it's yayin for a nazir, or if it's truma for Yisrael, even though he can't eat it. Sumcha says, no, let's not go so far. You need to have chulin, not truma. Now, for some reason, he doesn't argue about the yayin for the nazir part, and the Gemara is going to discuss that, and I think you can guess about the differences of how it's possible for a nazir to go ahead and get to drink wine. So, sumcha's omer only b'chulin. Now, switch. We are no longer talking about sumchas, and we are no longer talking about the kind of food. We are now switching to a new concept, and that is access. Forget about whether you can eat the food or not. That's section one. But section two is that the food has to be accessible to you at the moment that the Erev is chal. So the problem is, in that case, supposing the food is inaccessible because it's up in a tree and you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos. It's in a different rishos because it's 10 tefachim up, and therefore it's in a different rishos. Question is whether, is that considered to be your mokum shvisa? If you wanted your mokum shvisa to be on the ground, how can the food be up somewhere in a different rishos? Things like that. And how about if the food is inaccessible because you're a kohen and it's in the Beit HaKvarot? That has nothing to do with the machlokas about whether Does it have to be truma? Does it have to be non-truma for Yisrael? Or is it okay if it's good for somebody? That defines the food, doesn't define accessibility. So because of that, the accessibility is a completely different issue. Here, if the Kohen can't get to the food, then he's in a worse position than Yisrael, who can get to the truma. He's just not allowed to eat the truma. So because of that, our next case, just to confuse us and to make sure that we understand this distinction, because it's two totally different and unrelated things, is that though Sibcha says Bechulin, the Mishnah then moves on to, and you could actually put your Erev in a Beit HaPras. What is a Beit HaPras? You'll recall a Beit HaPras is a mokum that is tummy for a coin, but it's midrabbanan. It's a sada that either a kever was nechrashbo, somebody plowed under a kever, therefore the chachomim were metaking that an entire area around the area that was plowed over is considered to be tummy because of the fact that we assume that the remains were crushed and now the coin may come into contact with it. Said the Gudbishu was a place that it was nevad bo kever in certain circumstances, which may not be nogea here, as we'll see. And according to the Mishnah, the reason you can put the Kohen in the Beit HaPras, even though he's not allowed to go into a Beit HaPras, is because l'tzorech mitzvah, you are allowed to find a way to get through a Beit HaPras. And the way you get through a Beit HaPras, if you're a Kohen, is you take a fan with you, should be battery operated, and you blow your way across the Beit HaPras. What that does is it blows away any loose dirt, and then you would see any fragments of bone, and you're just careful not to touch it, because remember, fragments will not be metame in an ohel. They would only be metame if you actually touch them. So because of that, there'd be no problem, even according to Chachomi. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, if that's the case, you could actually work out a way that you can get into Beis HaKvaros. Because, I mean, you could take a helicopter into the Beis HaKvaros so that there would be a ohel that would be between you and the Kvarim, and then the Kohen would be able to land there and eat his Erev. So, l'chora, that would be possible to do even in a Beit HaKvarot. Or we'll get to discuss those issues. That, of course, is the old Shita Teva of Amigdal, relates to questions about Ohel Zoruk. It talks about El Al, all kinds of different things that are very interesting, but are not exactly our sugya right now. Anyway, Rabbi Yochanan tells us a klal, and that is, don't believe any klal. Now, this was an old Gadol Asher Bach question. So what do you do when somebody says, I'm telling you the klal is never believe a klal. Okay, I'll leave the philosophical import for you to think about. But here we are with our self-referential problem of Ein lemeidim min haklalot afilu b'makom shenemar b'chutz. Don't trust a klal that says everything except, even except, isn't good enough a guarantee that we've covered everything. And essentially, you have to look at that type of construct as if it's telling you a question of sets. So it's more like a klal protokol that you need to think about, okay, so what is this referring to? Obviously, it has to have some type of application. Okay, and now, wait a minute. Rabbi Yochanan sounds like he's talking about this Mishnah, but he couldn't have been talking about this Mishnah, because if he were, he wouldn't have said, even if it says chutz, because the Mishnah does say chutz. He would have just said, look, you can't rely on a klal, and I'd understand that he's talking about this klal. Obviously, he's not talking about this klal, okay? So mechlal, this is a fun gemara. So mechlal, see, from that you can derive that he wasn't referring to our Mishnah. So what was he referring to? Well, he was referring to this. Kol mitzvah taseh shazman gorma, anashim chayavim v'nashim piturot. So if we're talking about a mitzvah taseh that is dependent on time, then as we know very well, the din is women are potter. If it's a mitzvah shelo hazman gorma, echad nashim v'echad nashim chayavim. Now, the reason that Rabbi Yochanan says, well, don't believe it, is because, is that really true? The chol mitzvah taseh shehazman gorma nashim p'turotim. We got lots of examples where that simply isn't true. Okay, do women have to eat matzah at the Seder? Yes, because we learned that out from the comparison of not eating chometz to yes, eating matzah. And how about Simcha? It says, Beferish, that v'samachta atau v'techa. So that includes women on Yontav. How about the mitzvah of Hakel, of coming together on the every 7 years? And it says over there, Beferish, ha'anashim v'hanashim v'ataf. So obviously, those are things that women are chayev on. And how about the other thing? Any mitzvah that says, shelo hazman gorma, women are chayev. That's not true. Talmud Torah is not a mitzvah shazman gorma. reproduction is not a mitzvah shazman garma. Pidyon haben is not a mitzvah shazman garma. And nonetheless, the mitzvah shazman garma and nashim are not chayavot. In each one of these cases, we learn out of the posik. The idea limadatem otam is b'neichem, v'lot b'notechem, and we have piria v'rivia, which is v'kivshua, and it's not the derech of nashim to be kovesh, and we have the din of pidyon, because it says, tivdeh, we read tipadeh, whoever's chayav in his own pidyon, is chayav in pidyon haben. So, why are we saying that that's a klal? Therefore, that was where Rabbi Yochanan said, look, clearly, ein lebedim in haklalot, and that would be true even in our Mishnah, where it says chutz. Omer Rabbi Vitam Rabbi Yirmi, I mean, I can come up with other places that that could have been based on, you know. How about this? Od klal acher amru. Kol shenisa agabe hazav tameh. So anything that is actually being nisa on the zav is tame. Now, again, here, all of you who've been learning Kalim won't have any problem with this at all, because you'll remember the various dinim of Tuma that is specific, Lagabe Mishkav Umoshav, and we have three categories. We have the concept of Mishkav Umoshav, which means a kli that is meant specifically for the purpose of lying on or sitting on, but it has to be specifically for that purpose, will be Mekabel Tuma in a brand new way, without any contact. So it would be the old princess and the pea idea. The princess will be metame, the bottom mattress, despite the fact she never touched it. And therefore, assuming she has her period, obviously, so then she would be a metame mishkav umoshav. I think even princesses get into that trouble. So because of that, there's a specific din of only those kalim that could be mekabel that tuma. There's another type of tuma, which is called merkav. Merkav is a tuma that is specific to riding things. And they are things that are not meant for sitting on, even on the animal long term. You can't sit on them because they don't support you the way a chair does. They'll force your feet to go another either direction and so on. So those are only tuma because of merkav, according to some, it's even only the things that you would hold on to while you're riding. Fine, that's a machlokas rishonim, but in any event, that is a different tuma, which is slightly less than Mishkav Umoshav. Because Mishkav Umoshav, what it is that you sat on, becomes an ava tuma to be metame odim, to be metame the kalim shalav, is metame odim, metame begodim. Masha enkein merkav will sometimes do that, but only if you pick up the merkav. And that's called masa. But it will not be metame and odim, letame begodav bimaga, the way Mishkav Umoshav will. Now that we've talked about masa, let's talk about the opposite of masa. So there is a complementary state of masa, and that is called the idea of heset. Heset is where the zav carries something, or something is supported on the zav. And that is actually it's the mirror image of nosei, which is masa. So somebody would pick up a zav, or would pick up one of the things that a zav is metame, so he would become tame b'masa. But if a zav picks up something, that's called elyono shel zav. You'll remember that terminology, that which is above the zav, the din is the boil nida, is metame ke elyono shel zav. You'll remember all of that terminology from our past learning. And so the klal over there that we're taught is, in these dinim of the zav, that kol shenisa agabe hazav tameh, anything that is being carried on top of the zav. So even if he doesn't touch them, those are going to be tamei, and this is the elyono shel zav. And here it doesn't matter what it is. But anything that the zav himself is carried by is actually tahar, unless it is suitable for sitting on or for lying on. So mishkav u'moshav, and a person, because a person is tame, because he can be carry the zav and be mekabel tuma b'masa, and the zav has been tame b'masa. But kalim, unless they are kalim that are special for sitting on, remember the klal that we had many, many times. Anything where somebody's coming along and going to tell you, will you please get your rear end off of that because I need to use it for my job, amod v'nasa melachteinu cancels mishkav u'moshav. So if you take the janitor's bucket, turn it upside down, what did I need to sit? And he kicks you off the bucket. That's where it all started from. So then you end up not being able to be metame the bucket at any time because somebody's going to kick you off. Okay, so that would be the klal. Now, the question is, it's not a very good klal. Because vetuleka, vayikam merikam. How about merikam? And it doesn't even say anything about merikam. When you say merikam, what do you mean? I mean, if you're talking about something that he's sitting on, isn't that already moshav? No, what we're talking about now, over here, there's a different girsa, by the way, which is brought by some of the Rishonim, which says very simply, what kind of dumb question is that? There's two completely different dinim in the Torah. One is Merkav and one is Moshav. I mean, are you going to ask a question on the Psukim? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu talk about Merkav if there's also a dinim Moshav? Obviously not. Okay, we don't have that girsa. We have a girsa that simply defines for us the answer to that question. The answer to that question is there are things that are metame merkav that you don't sit on. So that would be, for instance, the gaba de ukva. That would be the part of, I don't know what the technical term for that is, but that's the piece of the saddle that sticks out in front. You can often hold on to that when you're scared of horseback riding. That's all the kids are holding on for dear life.
Pommel.
What's it called?
Pommel.
The pommel. Oh, right. Yes, 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 yes. Thank you. Yes, the pommel, correct. Anyway, so that's what we're talking about over here. And there certainly is a merkav that is not a moshav, but nonetheless, which will be matame. And the Mishnah doesn't say it. The Tanya ha ukaf tame moshav, but the tafuz, the pommel itself, is only tame merkav. And those, as I explained before, are slightly different in terms of how they're metame, because the merkav is only going to be metame if somebody carries it. Then it will be metame begodav. So, obviously, I could also conclude from that Mishnah, ein lemeidim in haklalot, afil b'makom shenamar bo chutz, because it said over here chutz, right? I mean, it said chutz from those places that are not amod v'nasim alachteinu, that are not made from Mishkav v'moshav. Says Ravina, I got another one. It says in our Mishnah, now, is that really true? I mean, you also, as we'll see later, you can't use mushrooms and you can't use truffles. Now, anybody who is particularly inclined to those should please close their sound at this point because it's very insulting. And the reason that you can't use that is because it's not commonly seen as something that someone would be koveya a meal on and make even a dessert to a meal. So things have changed, right? But anyway, you see from here that since we left out Kameim Pitrios, you see again, Ein Lemeidim in HaKlalot, Afilu B'Mokom, Shenemar Barchutz. Now, the question is about the Maaser Sheni. It said the same thing, and it said you could buy anything you want, but you can't buy water and salt. That's interesting that that's not quite true, because there's a Machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina about the following din. Now, there was a Machlokas about whether it was referring to Eruv or was referring to Meiser. Because so far we've put the whole thing together. And whatever is true about one, in the Mishnah, it implies it's true about the other. But there's something over here that applies to one or the other, but we're not quite sure who said what about which one it applies to. So one of them says the following applies to an Eruv, that this is only true when it's water or melach. But if it's water and melach that are mixed, they then become a dip. And a salt dip, is considered to be a food. And one of either Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, again, we're not sure who said what, one said that, well, that was a reference to Meiser, that you can use Meiser Sheni money in Yerushalayim, even though it says you can't buy water and salt. It doesn't mean water and salt. It means water or salt. But if you have water and salt together, you would be able to buy it with Kesef Meiser. Now, the one who says you can even buy a Meiser about it, he would certainly allow an Erev, because, I mean, the din of Meiser is something we learn out the Araisa. If the Torah considers this to be a food that is suitable to b'chol asher tava nafshecha, so then certainly you'd be allowed to make an Erev with it. But if you learn that it's Meiser, if you learn it's Eruv, then you cannot apply it to Meiser, and we'll see why not. Because Meiser has very, very defined sets of what is included in Meiser, which we do not have when it comes to Eruvin. And one of those things is it needs to be some aspect of Pira. It needs to be, as we're going to see, we get from the Pusik, that it needs to be Pira. Now, what exactly Pira means, we'll have to see when we get there. It doesn't mean a fruit, but it does mean something that relates to fruit. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Okay, now the question over here is whether this was sort of everybody's shita, because apparently in Bavel it wasn't this way. Ki Asr Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, and he said that you're allowed to buy meiser with buying mixed water and salt. So they asked on him, hey, Reb Yehuda ben Gadish lifnei Reb Eliezer, that in my father's home, shel beit ava, hayalokim tzir bekesev maaser. So they would buy tzir. Now, tzir is not water and salt. Tzir is fish brine, which sort of seems to be just water and salt. But because he said tzir, Sir Reb Eliezer said to him, nah, it doesn't make sense. Maybe what you heard was that your father would buy where there was a little bit of pieces of fish that were mixed into the tzir, and there you've got a little bit of fish, so that would be considered to be a food. But if you just buy basically salt water that was taken from a fish, that's just plain brine, and you salted fish in it, you couldn't buy Meiser Sheni. Now note that even Reb Yehuda ben Gadish never said anything about water and salt. Even he said tzir. The machlokas over here was whether it needed to have little bits of fish in it or not. But it certainly has to have some kind of something that is considered to be pura, and a fish is considered to be pura, as we'll see, but not water and not salt. So apparently, Reb Yitzchak, who said that you can use meiser to buy salt water, is not true based on the brisa. Om Rav Yosef, what Reb Yitzchak meant was that you put a little bit of oil into it. So since there was a little oil that was mixed into the salt water, so then it becomes mutter to buy with your Meiser Sheni money, because the oil is considered to be pira. But just buying plain old-fashioned salt water, that you could certainly not do. Okay, so question over here, whether this is true about the Eruv, or this is only true about Meiser. According to the Rambam, it is not true about the Eruv, according to some of the other, it is true about the Eruv, and according to some of the other Rishonim, it does not. Okay. So, Omalei Abaya, typically Mishum Shemen. This makes no sense. If you're talking about a case where there's oil in it, so then the oil is what you're talking about. You're paying the money for the oil. So, who cares if there's also salt water? Who cares? You have money of Meiser that you have to use for food. And if part of that money goes for food and the other part goes for non-food, then the part that went for the non-food is never going to lose its Kedusha of Meiser Sheni. And therefore, you're in a real pickle, which is also the same situation. So if you go ahead and you use that money for that, so then a certain proportion of money was used for water and salt, and the other part of the money was used for the oil, so what are you going to do? That's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is the concept of Havla'ah. What Havla'ah means is that where you pay additional funds for something, let's say we do this very often when it comes to Lulav and Esrog during Shemitah, right? So what do you do if you got to buy an Esrog that is Kaddish B'Kedusha Shemitah? You're not allowed to buy and sell, right? Okay. So you can absorb, that's called Havla'ah, you can absorb the cost of the Esrog in the Lulav, or whatever the situation was. That's called Havla'ah. So over here, you do that as well. What you do is you pay a greater price, and it's as if, but you say, I'm buying the oil, but for a very high price. Now, obviously, you were buying the whole mixture, but you're considered to be paying for the oil. What? You can do that? Bavla Mishari? I mean, that sounds like sort of a trick. But we learn it from a pusik. That's the point. In. Because it does say in the Braisa like this. Ben Bagbag takes the beautiful pusik that is talking about what it is that you can do with your kesev meiser. And what he does is, he says, every one of the words in this pasuk is very strange. Because it says, v'natata ha-kesev b'kol asher taveh nafshecha. And we're going to see that this is a classic klal prat or klal kind of pasuk. Anything you want, b'kol asher taveh nafshecha. And then we go on to discuss babakar, uvatzon, uvayayin, uvashechar. And then we go at the end of the pasuk, we have another klal. Uvchol asher tishalcha nafshecha. Okay, now, it's all very nice to have a list of things which could be a klal prater klal, but why did they all have to say, ba? This is how Tosfos understands it, and the way the Gemara comes out at the end, it makes more sense to read it like this. So why does it say, ba bakar? Why does it say, ba tzon, ba yayin, ba shechar? Why doesn't it just say, b'chol asher tavanav shechar, bakar, tzon, yayin, shechar? So the ba implies that something is included within something else. Aha, exactly the concept of avla'ah, correct? So therefore, when it says ba bakar, that teaches you that you can pay extra for bakar, and the money for the miser bought you not only the meat, but it bought you the skin of the animal that you are then going to eat. When it says ubatzon, that's coming to tell me that you're allowed to spend that money on the tzon, and some of it, obviously, because you paid more, is going for the wool that you're going to shear from that tzon. Bayayin teaches you that you can buy the yayin even though you're paying a lot of extra money for the fancy container that the wine is in. Bashechar tells me that you can buy temed after wazichmitz. What that means is that you take leftovers, you take a lees, you put water on the lees, let it soak for a while, and then it actually starts to ferment. But obviously, you're paying also for water that was added, and yet the entire drink you're allowed to buy with kesef maaser. Another example of havla'ah, right? So all of this is teaching me the din of havla'ah. Okay, now we know about havla'ah. But meanwhile, we have a very cute aside, and it's very beautiful. Rabbi Yochanan says, if anybody can explain to me how Ben Bagbag is going to deal with the problem of the babakar, I am ready to be his servant. I will carry his clothes to the bathhouse for him all the way. Go ahead. I dare you. Give me a pshat. Okay, what's the problem? Well, the problem is like this. If you analyze why you would need this list and not just give me one example and learn from that the concept of havla'ah, you end up not having any explanation for why I need the first one. Why do I need babakar? So what Rabbi Yochanan is going to do very beautifully, he's going to go all the way down and then go all the way back up again. So in other words, if it said babakar, I would not know batzon. If it said batzon, I would not know the bashekar and so on and so forth, right? So what we're going to do is go through each one of them. So what he says is like this. Look, saying bakar, I mean, obviously, I mean, you could be mavlia because the skin is part of the body of the animal, but that doesn't mean that you could buy sheep with shearable wool, which is not part of its body, so that wouldn't count. And let's say the Torah would have said the sheep. So I would have said, okay, the sheep, I mean, the wool is grows from it, but the wine together with the fancy bottle of the wine, I mean, it didn't grow with the wine, so maybe you couldn't do that. And let's say even if the Torah was marred by the wine, I would have said, okay, obviously, I mean, you need, it's a liquid. A liquid needs a container. What are you going to do with wine without the container? So it only makes sense. The Torah would be marred by the container. But to tell me that by adding water to grape leaves, that allows me to buy them, even though I'm basically paying money for water, I mean, maybe not. Right? Now, on the other hand, that might be just kiyua b'alma. On the other hand, when we have it at the last thing, right? In order to clarify that, we have the shechar. But let's start on the way back. Let's say that I would have said bashechar. I would have thought that bashechar is coming to tell me that a type of fruit that causes drunkenness is included in the general concept of shechar. So that's a dvela ki'ili, but that's a true fruit. But maybe to pay for a bottle when you're buying wine, maybe not. Okay, so therefore the Torah is the wine. All right. But if I only knew that, I would say, well, sure, you can't buy a liquid without a container. But you could certainly buy sheep without wool. If somebody else sheared off the wool, maybe that would not be allowable to buy bavla. That's why it says tzon, that even that you can do. Now, I challenge you to tell me, and what does the bakar tell me? Because obviously, if I'm allowed to do havla'ah, even on wool that's not part of the body, kol shekein I could do the havla'ah on the skin, which there's no way for me to avoid. I mean, that's what it is. It's got the skin. Now, I know what you're going to tell me, but you're wrong. You're going to try to tell me that if the Torah wouldn't have said babakar, then when I read tzon, I would have thought, you know what? Tzon doesn't mean you can buy a tzon with its wool. Tzon means you can buy a tzon with its skin. That's why it had to say babakar, because a bakar doesn't have wool, and that clarifies that. But that's ridiculous, because then why mention tzon? Because if that would be the point, I would say to myself, wait a minute, it's a little bit ridiculous to talk about sewn if it doesn't mean to include the wool. Why confuse me? Just write bakar. But there is no wool. So if you write sewn, obviously it's coming to address the wool. Okay, ready. Tell me what I need bakar for. That is why I'm telling you, I'm ready to work for you. Hainu deka amar Rabbi Yochanan. Anybody who can explain bakar according to Ben Bagbag has got himself a good servant. Okay. Now, both of the pshatim that we have about Rav Yehuda ben Gadish and Rav Eliezer, both of them were talking about tzir, whether the machlokus between them was, does it need to have little tiny pieces of fish that are traceable, or something that comes from the fish is also considered to be. But definitely, everybody agrees that fish is food in terms of Maiser Sheni, correct? All right. So now let us see how they seem to differ from the two Tanoim I'm going to bring you in a moment that disallow fish. I'd like to know what they're arguing about. And now, before we get to this, I'm going to remind you of another very important concept in the Torah. There's this major difference between klal prat uklal and riboy miut riboy. This is a fundamental machlokas. And it's a shaila of whether the Torah is actually teaching you things along a theory of sets. If the Torah deals with sets, then you have a right to start creating sets out of various inyanim and learn out the expansion of the set or the limitations of the set based on the examples that are provided you. But if the Torah is not oriented to teaching you about sets, it's simply talking about varied qualities, so then you would have no right to access it in terms of sets. And this makes a tremendous difference in terms of drushes, because when you're dealing with klal prat or klal, then the interrelationship is pretty straightforward. What I see is, first I see a klal, which seems to tell me, okay, everything is a member of this set. Now you break it up into a list of particular things which create different sets. And then you say another klal at the end, which there's no purpose in unless the klal at the end is telling you, do not view these things as items. They're not items. They are sets. Now, the only question would be, which is the most fundamental klal? The opening klal, which is subsequently limited by the details. And if it had been left without the last klal, what would we have had? A klal and a prat, or a klal with three prats. But the din of a klal and a prat is only the prat is included, nothing else. Then that means that the original klal is constricted. The second klal is the exact opposite, because if you have a prat and a klal, and we wouldn't have had that first klal, then the second klal would have been totally expansive, except for leaving out one detail, you see? So the question would be, a klal prat or klal, there are two ways of looking at. We can look at it as an expanded klal and prat, or we can look at it as a constricted prat for klal. And that's going to be itself a sub-machlokas coming up about how to understand klal prat or klal. But when it comes to riboy miut riboy, if you do not buy into this midah of klal prat or klal, so then riboy miut riboy never allows you to make expanded sets. It does allow you to expand, but it would not expand with the classic klal prat or klal, which always ends with me'ein haprat. Anything that is similar to these sets is included. That's not the case by riboy miut riboy. So the case over there is it remains a riboy, and we view the aspect of the limitation of the prat as teaching me, depending on how many there are, teaching me to make a list in your own mind of what is most likely to be included and what is least likely to include it. Depending on the number of pratim, throw out the lower members of the list. So therefore, if you've got one prat, throw out one of your list, the thing that is least likely to succeed. Okay. So therefore, if we take that, we understand that the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish and Rabbi Eliezer, who both agree that fish are valid foods for Maaser Sheni, are differing because they understand that Reb Yehuda ben Gadosh, Reb Elazar, they derish the entire pasuk that we had, the babakar and the batzon and so on and so forth, as ribuy umiyot. But the two tanoim that we're about to bring in the brises, they derish it as klal uprat. So Reb Yehuda ben Gadosh, Reb Elazar derish ribuy umiyot. Okay, let's take a look at the pasuk in terms of ribuy umiyot. V'natata hakesef b'chol asher taveh nafshecha. That's a ribuy, and it would include anything. Babakar ubatzon bayayin uveshechar. That's a miyot. B'chol asher tishalcha nafshecha, that's a ribuy again. Now, the rule of a ribuy miyot ribuy is that it basically is marba everything, not only ke'ena prat. Okay, so what are we left with? Everything. All right, but I mean, it does give you the prat. What was it memayit? So that's the machlokas. According to Reb Eliezer, it was memayit the tzir of dagim, because water mixed with salt, according to him, was not part of the original concept even, because it isn't part of the way in which we think of food. These are things that are taken with food, but they're not food. According to Reb Yehuda ben Gadosh, no, I need the prat to cancel out the mayim u'melach, because they would be food, but they're the least likely food. So if we have our prat, we will cancel that. Okay. Now, what about the brises? The brises that argue and include fishies, they are understanding the pasuk as klal prat or klal. So here's brisa number one. The tanya, v'natata kesef b'chol asher taveh nafshecha, that's a klal. Babakar ubatzon b'yayin ubeshechar, that's a prat. B'chol asher tishalcha nafshecha, that's a klal again. What's the rule? Klal prat or klal? Iyat adan ela ke'ena prat. What is the prat? Well, the prat is a pre-mi-pri and gidule karka. All of the things that were mentioned are things that reproduce. They are either animals or they are types of plant growths that have seeds and growing from a seed. And furthermore, everything that was mentioned grow on the ground and are nourished by the earth. So they're called gidule karka. Even animals are called gidule karka. So anything which is pre-mi-pri and gidule karka is included in what to buy with my sasheni money. Another braita says, v'tanya idach, no, the way to understand the prat is just like the prat is mifurash vlad vladot haaretz. If you take a look at the creation narrative, you find that all of the things in this list are part of the narrative that describes what the earth is meant to bring forth. And so, af kol vlad vladot haaretz, all things that the earth brings forth, which does not include fish, because fish, it was the yishritzu hamayim. It wasn't something that comes from the earth. And therefore, they are considered to be water evolved and not earth evolved. My benayim. So what would be the difference between these two pshatim? Omar Abaye, fish. That would be the difference, which of course we do not believe, because we just said a minute ago that the only way to get the difference between those who include fish and those who don't include fish is to say that one is doing ribuy umiyot and the other is doing klal uprat. So we are about to throw Abaye's approach out. And we assumed that he was wrong at the beginning, but we need to talk it out. So Abaye thought it's fish, because if you're learning pre-mi-pri, Vigidule karka. So that would mean pre-mi-pri. Does not mean, it means pira in the sense of something that is reproduced from a previously existing thing, plant or animal. And dagim are called gidule karka. Masha'enkin, if you hold that it has to be something in the creation narrative, then fish are not considered to be vladaisa aretz, because it says yishutsu amayim. No, come on. Abaye would never have said that dagim are considered to be gidule karka, because that would get him into tremendous contradictions. If Abaye himself said that it depends on what it is that you are going to be, what you eat depends on what you are going to be chayev. Now, there's a major, tremendous machlokas about how to learn this entire sugya between the Rambams, whose approach, remember, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs is we don't have double lavs to talk about the same thing. When you have extra lavim, they're not extra malkias. And therefore, he does not understand this Gemara to be referring to, okay, let's add up the number of low, 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 and give you that number of malkas. No. we have categories of Isurin, and any different category, which is to the exclusion oftentimes of other categories, you can have cross categories. You get something which is aquatic and also land and also airborne and so on. So then you would be chayav in each one of these different lavim. There are other things that are only one and not the other, obviously. Okay. The partial way that Rashi understands this is that what we're talking over here is different psukim. And what psukim do we apply to which type of thing? And how many of these psukim? So we have, Al tishaktus nafshosachim b'chol hasheretz hashoreitz v'lo titamu. And then we have, when it comes to water, kol hasher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset mikol sheretz hamayim mibesarim lo teilechu. And then we have also kol hasher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset lo tochelu. And then we have kol sheretz hashoreitz al ha'aretz sheketzu lo yeachel. And we have kol holech al gachon v'chol holech al arpa v'chol mar beraglayim l'chol asheretz asheretz al aretz lo tochlom. So we need to analyze what lavim are going to apply to which type of creature. So Abaye said that if you eat this putita, and a putita is some kind of bug that grows in the water, so even though it's not a kezias, but it's a birya. So if it's a birya, you're going to get four separate malkias because of the two general isurim of eating any type of sheket. And then we had the ein lo sapir v'kaskeset twice. So there would be, therefore, two more. So you ate this water creature. Okay. If he eats an ant. Now, again, the Rambam doesn't even understand that the species named here are to be translated the way I'm translating them, because he understands that the nimala is a type of insect that swims, flies, and walks on the ground. So it's, he says, beferish, it's not our, what we call an ant. But again, according to Rashi, if he eats a nimala, so then he's got five separate malkas, because he has the two normal isurin, which are any type of sheretz or sheketz, and then there's an additional three isurim of something that's on the land. If he eats a tzira, which is like a hornet or a yellowjack, so then he's got the additional, he's got the two general isurim, then he's got three isurim of shrutzim, because on the ground, because it also walks on the ground, and then he has the additional one that is talking about anything that flies, that is usher to you, which is any tummy bird or any tummy flying insect. Fine. Now, if you're telling me that fish are considered to be land nourished, so then they should be gidulei karka, then I should have also, when I ate the putita, I should also get another iser, which would make a total of seven, the way Rashi's understanding it, for eating something that crawls on the ground, because fish are also considered to be crawling on the ground. So we throw it a bye. Okay, so he definitely couldn't have said that. And the point is the difference between the two brises as to whether it's called gidulei karka, and that it has to do with birds. Can you buy a bird with kesef ma'aser sheni? So if you say it's pre-mi-pri and it's gidulei karka, fine, birds are obviously, they reproduce and they are fed from things that grow from the ground. So they were included. And if you hold, however, that they need to be things that were mentioned in the creation narrative as something that's grown out of directly from the earth, obviously these birds did not come from the earth. They came from the rekak, and as the, which is mud, and as the Gemara in Chulin says, look, why do you think birds have feet that have scales on them? Because they're evolved from fish. And that means that they're not completely aquatic and they're not completely land. So because of that, they're not included. So the braita that says that you can buy the birds, so what is the basis of that? And the one that's mamayat the birds, what's the basis of that? I mean, it's all klal prado klal, right? Ah, as we said, there's a difference between whether we view a klal prado klal as a constricted prat and klal, or whether we view it as an expanded klal uprat. And that is the difference. So the one who is marba the ofot, and that will tell us how far to take the similarity to the sets. Do we constrict the sets, or do we broaden the envelope of the set? So if you hold that you're including the ofot, he says the way to look at a klal prado klal is that the main part of the klal, prat, or klal, is the second klal, which means that it's a prat and klal in its essence, which is very expansive, and it's got a klal tacked on the beginning to make sure you don't overexpand, because the klal at the beginning is a klal of prat, which is limiting. And so therefore, according to him, if the klal of basra is dafka, so then the way to look at it is you have prat uklal, then if that's the main way to look at it, the klal is always mosif ala prat, then the last klal will add everything. And it would be drabi kol mile, therefore the Torah throws in the first klal to make it a hani klal akama, to limit it to some extent. So therefore it has to be similar. The sets are therefore defined as two separate issues. They need to be similar in two ways. So it needs to be the pira, rather vladais mi vladais, and it also needs to be nourished from the ground. Masha'inke. If you look at it that you cannot be marba de ofad, you're maya de ofad, he looks at it that the klala kama is the issue. That's the main thing. Okay, then that means essentially what we're looking at is a klal uprat, which would be very, very limiting, in which the actual prat as given and not as a set would be the only thing that would be included. Hani in midiachrin alo. Therefore, according to him, the second klal is an expansion, but it doesn't change the essential idea. So the hani klala batra, the rabbiya called the dami le mishlosha tzedonim, it needs to be fully similar to the prat in all particular ways, because we need to be very, very limited over here. It doesn't necessarily mean three. In other words, sometimes it could be four, sometimes it could be five. It doesn't matter. It just means that it would have to be similar in every way. And since the bird over here doesn't share in the Oretz, meaning that it wasn't created from the Oretz in the creation narrative, it's not included, even though it is a pre, and even though it's something which is Vlad mi Vlados, but it doesn't share all three. Okay, gentlemen, so now we've got an idea where we get the concepts of the food and how it applies to Meiser. Meiser Sheni, therefore, obviously is going to be more strictly defined than the Erev, which is just a Rabbanan concept of what are you comfortable eating and considering as a meal on Shabbos. And because of that, we said before that, look, I mean, if you're going to include something from Meiser, then you certainly would have included it in the Erev. That was the basis of our prior statement.